One of South Florida's most prolific playwrights is in studio. Then, let's talk cafecito. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Michael McKeevers is an award-winning playwright and actor living here in South Florida. He's written dozens of plays and shorts that have been performed in Florida, New York, and Europe. His latest show, The Camp, is being performed by the West Boca Theater Company at the Levis JCC in Boca Raton. He joins us to discuss the inspiration behind this very dark story. Also, how do you start your morning? Is it with a cafecito, perhaps a colada? Maybe you prefer a cortadito. Well, we talk with Jay Cattell, author of Cuban Coffee, Windows of Miami. He went to over 100 different ventanitas in Calle Ocho and throughout Miami to find the stories behind our favorite morning beverages. All of that today on Sundial here on WLRN. First, the news. Welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for listening. Playwright Michael McKeever has written for the stage, and those include stages in South Florida, off-Broadway, regional theaters around the country, and in Europe. His first play, set as Hurricane Andrew was bearing down on us, was produced here 21 years ago. He's a founding member of the Zoetic Stage here in Miami, and he's won countless awards. His play, The Camp, is having its premiere. The West Boca Theater Company is performing it at the Levis JCC in Boca Raton, and he joins us now in Sundial. It's a pleasure to have you here,
it's
Michael.
It's great to be here. Thanks.
All right, let's start with The Camp, because it started a couple of weeks ago, right?
Yes.
And it's running down its final performances.
Exactly. We run through this the 17th.
All right. Without giving a lot of way, it takes place at the end of World War II in a small town in Germany, where American troops discover a concentration camp. Why did you want to write about something that could be so dark?
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of history. I've always been fascinated by the world and the past. And the whole concept of an entire country ignoring these atrocities that were happening has always fascinated me. So what I did was I took that concept and made it very small and very intimate. In the form of this sweet little village called Frostadt, and I have an American captain who brings his men in just to pass through, and in passing through they discover this camp, and in the form of the mayor, the people of this village explain how they didn't know anything. And over the course of the hour and 20 minutes of this play, you find out what's true and what's not true, and how we as human beings can sometimes make ourselves blind to reality, and how that reality ceases to exist as a result.
And that's the underlying theme, is that even the, you know, innocent bystanders, even people you would think are good people, turn a blind eye.
Exactly.
To the ugliest parts of humanity.
Exactly. And what the play does is it examines that part of all of us. And because we're living in such strange political times right now, there's a relevance within this play, and the audience is responding to it.
And yeah, I wanted to ask about that. I mean, as you're writing this, and take me back when you were writing that, how much of everything that you do see nationally and internationally impacted, you know, your work?
It's hysterical. Well, not hysterical. It's a little terrifying. When I first started writing it, it was a different world, because I started writing it well over a year ago. And the world has changed so drastically that when we started rehearsal for this particular production, we started seeing the parallels of the world in which we live in with, you know, Nazi Germany in 1945.
Did anything change? Did you go back and change anything, considering what's happened?
No, but what I did was I highlighted the relevance and underscored it so the audience would recognize it.
And the other thing I mentioned too is that you're not just a playwright; you're an actor. You also love to work on the sets as an art designer. You're in this show.
Yes, I am.
Were you writing your part for you, or how did you end up where you are in that show?
No, very seldom do I actually work as an actor in my own plays. It was just in this particular play that part fit me well. And it gave me an opportunity to work with a director, Michael Leeds, who's a New York and local director who I adore. Not only do I love working with him as a playwright, but also as an actor. So we talked about it, and he agreed that it was a good fit. And so that's how I ended up in it.
I'm curious, though, because you know the story inside and out, and you're performing in it. At any point, do you ever find yourself on the stage in rehearsals with the actors, and you have to stop before the director stops? Stop. Wait a minute. That's not what I intended.
Oh no! There are times when I do that internally.
Okay.
But more times than not. And again, when you're in a really good show and you're working with really good actors, usually if something is really tanking, everyone on stage knows it. And so you stop the rehearsal and you adjust.
And of course, the relationship between actors and directors. The actors think they know what's best. The director obviously has their vision for the show. Again, this is your show, though. You wrote it. So what was that relationship like?
I'm good that way. I take pride that I play well with others. As an actor, I'll do whatever the director tells me to. If I find it uncomfortable, if it's not good, I'll point that out. But I've worked with enough bad playwrights who have been really bad in rehearsals to learn. Yeah, I learned years ago, don't do that. Never do that, because it's just bad form.
Earlier this year, your play Daniel's Husband was performed off-Broadway. Is that like the playwright's dream when your show gets to
that
point?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, it was one of those things. And all my plays, I'm very proud to say, have had their world premieres here in South Florida. To me, it's a very warm, very comfortable place, and I know the theaters here, and I have relationships with it. So when they go out into the world, whether it be Germany, Russia, Poland, where they played, or in the case of Daniel's Husband, to New York, it's always great to see it. With that particular production of Daniel's Husband at Primary Stages, it was a gorgeous production with a really great cast and a top-notch director. And it was lovely because it took place at the Cherry Lane, which is this historic, beautiful little space down in the village where Sam Shepard and Edward Albee and all these amazing playwrights have had their work first produced. And, it was, talk about a bucket list.
You know what? You've had people ask you, though, why aren't you in New York?
It's very simple. My agent asks me all the time, why am I not in New York? And I say, because, love, you're there. She's there, and so I can live. I have the opportunity of living where I want to. And I was born and raised in Miami. I love the I love the city. I love the people. I love the weather.
Especially this time of year.
Exactly. And my family's here. My husband's here. So this is home to me. So the beauty is I get to call this home, but because of being a playwright, I get to work around the country, around the world, knowing that I can come back here.
Again, I'm talking with Michael McKeever, and his new show is right now. It's playing at the Levis JCC in Boca Raton. The West Boca Theater Company is performing it. It's called The Camp. And we're going to continue this conversation with Mr. McKeever here in just a little bit. Just a reminder, this is our membership campaign, and your support helps support programs like this one. So take a moment right now and go online or make the call. Pledge your support to WLRN and Public Radio. I really do appreciate it. We all appreciate it. Thanks so much. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez, joined in studio with playwright Michael McKeever, and we're talking about his new show, The Camp, which is having its premiere this month. The West Boca Theater Company is performing it at the Levis JCC in Boca Raton. And, Michael, we were talking about, I wanted to get to just this overall question about theater in general, but really specifically is regional theater. And from your experience across the country, but especially here in South Florida, what's the health of regional theater right now?
Oh, it's a great question. Theater has been dying for the past 40 years, but it's always here and it always does well. It used to be that all the really new great work was happening in New York and on Broadway. That's not happening. I mean, there's great stuff on Broadway, but all the new work is starting in the regions. So, like I said, even though the theory is that regional theater has been dying, the fact of the matter, especially in South Florida, there's this amazing push that's happened in the last 10 years where theaters are getting more ambitious and much more brave about the work that they're putting on stage. There's been a huge push for world premieres that have happened in the South Florida region, from Miami all the way up to Palm Beach, where theaters that would normally have been terrified to explore new work that is from a playwright without a national name or a title that the audience doesn't know. They used to be just, they wouldn't go near it. These days, however, more and more theaters are not only exploring it, but embracing world premieres. I can name a number of plays that either myself or playwrights, local playwrights like Christopher Demas Brown, whose work has started in this region, has started in Miami, and have gone on to productions in California, in New York, in Chicago.
Do you think that you could make it today in theater if you were starting over?
In some ways, I think it would be easier for me, especially in this region, because back in 1996, when I wrote my first play and had it first produced, no one in South Florida was doing world premieres. I was blessed that a great little theater called New Theater and an artistic director named Rafael Diacha embraced new work and was willing to take a chance with it. These days, it's much more prevalent.
Is this true? I read something about this, and I had to ask you, did you make a promise to a theater about a show, and you still hadn't even written it? They said, sure, we'll take it. We'll do it.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Okay. I mean, do you just work better under that kind of stress?
I do. Here's the thing. I never went to school for playwriting. I went to school for advertising design. My degree is in advertising. And I spent my 20s as an art director for a great production house. I art directed TV commercials. So I didn't write my first play till I was 30. What I learned from working in advertising and TV, though, is everything's on a deadline.
Because what I'd read, too, is the fact that you had finished the first act, the actors were ready to start rehearsal, and then you, as they're doing that, you're going back to write the rest of it?
Okay, that's a little terrifying because that's true. yeah, it was a play called Stuff up in Boca Raton at a theater called The Caldwell, and they commissioned the play. And I had the first act was written, and I kept saying, I don't need time. Give me a deadline. You give me a deadline, I'm fine. And they had the first act, and we had started rehearsal, and I knew where the play was going to go. And I just kept saying, you're going to have it. I promise you're going to have it. You're going to have it. And lo and behold, about a week before we opened, they had the full script.
I can say, as a guy who's tried to dabbled a little bit in acting, that's stressful. That's stressful. Okay. Before I let you go, I do have to ask you this. You know, this is the cultural conversation right now.
Sure.
We talk about, you know, sexual harassment and harassment in general in the workplace. And the Old Vic Theatre in London is investigating incidents of inappropriate behavior by Kevin Spacey when he was the artistic director there. Look, every industry in some way is dealing with this. I'm wondering how theatre is tackling this issue.
I got to tell you, it's something that all of us in theater circles are talking about because it's something that happens on a regular basis. And the thing with theater, not just in South Florida, but theater around the world, is, you know, they're theater folks. We're just very huggy and very, you know, touchy. But there's a line that gets crossed. There's a line that gets drawn. So does it happen in theater? Absolutely. The question is, you know, there's a wave. There is a changing moment in history right now. So hopefully, more and more, like it is happening everywhere else in the world, it'll get addressed in this world as well.
How are people talking about it, though? You know, I'm just curious as to what, you know, as you said, and I do remember. It is. It could be a very intimate setting because
sure.
You're with these people. You're in these tight little rooms, changing, you're working together.
There's lines that get drawn. And I've been very lucky that I haven't been, you know, up close and personal with any of these situations. But there's just horror stories coming from places. I know in Chicago there was one theater where an artistic director was also acting in shows where he was, you know, supposed to be kissing on stage. And there's, you know, a stage kiss and then there's a kiss. And, you know, there's a very fine line about where you can go. And, you know, I've had very rare situations where I've had to actually push someone back and say, you know, calm down there. This is a stage kiss. But given the power of some artistic directors in some places, they'll take advantage of it.
Michael McKeever, again, playwright. His new show, The Camp, having its premiere this month. The West Boca Theater Company is performing it at the Levis JCC in Boca Raton. We'll have more information on our website. Michael, it's been a pleasure, man.
Thank you. It's been great. Thank you so much.
I really appreciate it. And break a leg.
Thank you.
All right, just a reminder, too, this is our membership campaign, and we need your support for programs like this one. Support that intelligent conversation. Make that call right now. Thanks so much. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Well, many a Miamian likes to start the day with a shot of caffeine. Perhaps it's a cafecito or a cafe con leche or maybe a colada. And there are plenty of ventanitas in Miami where people can get their caffeine fixed by just walking up to the window. Jacob Cattell has visited many of them, probably more than you and me put together, especially the ones along Calle Ocho. And he has a book out called Cuban Coffee, Windows of Miami. A lot of beautiful photographs of this incredible journey that he took. And he joins us now. Jacob, man, it's a real pleasure. Thanks so much.
Yo, what's up? Shout out to all the South Florida from Key West to Jupiter, baby. WLRN.
There you go. Let's start with the obvious.
Sure.
You know, what's your favorite shot of coffee, of caffeine? What do you like to drink?
Jet Fuel. Colada, baby.
Colada.
Colada.
Colada. How many do you have a day?
Several, if I can help it.
Okay. All right. Probably had it. How many did you have before you got here today?
I had one at the Cacique right there by Government Center on Flagler Street, downtown Miami.
Do you remember the first time you had a Cuban coffee? How old were you?
About 20. 20? In Hialeah, yeah.
29.
I'm an insider outsider, so I come from not the Cuban culture, but with our respect to all the cultures that are here in Miami.
Oh, okay. When you started this project,
yeah,
I mean, this is an extensive project. I mean, how many different windows did you go to?
Around 100 Cuban coffee windows.
There are 100 of them.
Well, there's hundreds, if not thousands. There's about 60 on Calle Ocho between Biscayne Bay and Chrome Avenue. And then I went to about 40 around everywhere else.
And did you were on your bike on most of these?
I did a lot of it on a bike. I did a lot of it in a car. But I definitely went from Chrome Avenue to Biscayne Bay, which is about 25 miles, a few times on the bike.
When you go up to one of these,
yeah.
I mean, while you were working on your project, what was that like? I mean, did you just go up, introduce yourself, tell them what you were doing, or did you just start taking photographs?
I always tell everybody what I'm doing with all due respect, even though it's on a public thoroughfare, hundreds of thousands of people. And by the way, I definitely do not know more about this than everybody else. I'm more like ignorant, and I try to learn about it. But I would say, oye, me llamo Jake. Estoy haciendo un libro sobre Ventanita. Could I take some photos? And most of the people want to be famous. So.
And they pretty much open up to you. And they even, I saw some of the photos I saw, you actually were able to get inside where people were working.
Yeah, for sure. That's what I do.
All right. Tell me one of the things that surprised you most about this experience. What did you learn from it? You know, maybe something that caught you off guard that you never thought you knew about these these coffee windows.
Well, the main thing is that it's a cultural phenomenon specific to Miami, although it appears in other places all throughout the world. But it really is something special throughout Miami, where 67% of the population is Hispanic, or what they so-called that. So just trying to find the gems in everyday life and represent them properly, documenting them in the spirit of creating a book that other people around the world can enjoy, because coffee is the number one beverage in the world and the number one drug in the world, caffeine. China is one of the fastest growing markets for coffee on earth, so I want to do Miami stories that they can resonate globally.
I'm going to have to check on that, but I'll believe you for the moment, considering you know, that there are more than a billion people in China.
True.
How many photographs did you collect?
Thousands of photographs. The book is 410 pages with about 250 color photographs.
What was your best experience?
Man, just meeting other people, talking to them, and just sharing with them who I am and what I do, and them telling me about who they are and what they do. Like Hidalvis from Camaway over there at the Pit Barbecue. That's almost the westernmost coffee window in Miami-Dade County, discovering that the Oasis Cafe on Key Biscayne has been around over 50 years, and it's probably the oldest Ventanita in Miami-Dade County. Going to places like Manolo and Renee over here in downtown Miami, which has been around over 25 years. Also Cacique, places like Montes de Oca, places like Las Palmas, and all these historic venues that have, you know, contributed to so many people's lives here in the community, and just recognizing them for their greatness and trying to be a good steward of the information and passing it around to everybody in a way that they can find it if they're interested.
You know what? As you mentioned, some of these places have been around a while.
Yeah.
How many places have not lasted as long, or do they tend to last a while?
Some A's, the restaurant business, so it's cutthroat. Some of them I hear they, from one day to the next, window opens, window close. Some of them, they make it a year. Some of them 5, 10, 50. It's just business. It's capitalism. Coffee is a commodity. And sugar up in Palm Beach County, sugar is a major commodity, and about 25% of the sugar consumed in the United States is actually grown in Palm Beach County, right there on the southern shores of Lake Okeechobee, where I traveled for this book, which is available on Amazon, and it's called Cuban Coffee Windows of Miami.
Now you went out to the sugarcane areas.
Yeah, definitely, and I shot the major corporate fields, which have been blamed for a lot of the destruction in the Everglades. Maybe they are responsible, maybe not. That's for up to you to decide. But I went to where it grows wild, and I went to where it's grown corporatively.
And you went out to U.S. Sugar. That's where out in Clewiston, right?
Yeah, you may be familiar with Domino and U.S. Crystals.
Yes, absolutely.
I went past by the U.S. Sugar office for sure, so Broward County is host to a large Jamaican population. Some of the best coffee in the world comes from Blue Mountain. Palm Beach County is where a lot of this sugar is grown. Coffee is some way that you can use to track the explosive growth of the city of Miami from the suburban to the agricultural zones. And so coffee builds Miami, sugar destroys Miami. And somewhere between those two is the yin and yang that makes this earth keep spinning around.
You know what? I'm glad that you talked about Palm Beach County and Broward County as well,
yeah.
Because, I mean, your focus for the book was, a lot of it was the coffee places here.
Definitely.
In Miami. But, I mean, have you heard from people in any of those other counties about their own coffee windows? Are there a lot of them around?
Well, over there in Broward and Palm Beach, they're similar. It's about one out of every four, 20, 25% Latin American population. Miami's about 3 out of 4, about 67%. So I'm really just trying to show people that the biggest, most populated county in Florida, which is Miami, has this culture, and then other people can see for themselves how it relates to them.
How long did it take for you to put this together?
I shot all the photos in about 6 weeks and spent about 8-9 months doing all the words
verbiage. You said 6 weeks? You shot the photos in 6 weeks?
Hey, so I go hard.
You visited...
Yeah,
almost 100 places within 6 weeks.
Yep.
How many would you do a day?
As many as possible.
So you would start early in the morning. You would be riding around and just visiting different places.
Yeah, definitely.
Were you having a coffee at every one of those places?
Yeah, one day I had 10 of them, 10 coladas. So I had to do it on a bike. Otherwise, if I was driving, that would have been dangerous. Hey, people, that is a drug. Just remember that.
I'm just wondering how your heart is doing right now, but okay. That's intense.
Yeah,
that is pretty intense. Did you ever have an experience that wasn't pleasant? Did you ever have a coffee that wasn't any good? And you don't have to mention the place, by the way. I just want to know.
No, but there is something that occurs. If you're disrespectful to the coffee lady, she can definitely make sure that you either have a great experience or a terrible one.
Tell me about that. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
I mean, I just walk up to the window. Hey, can I have a cafecito, you know, please? And maybe,
well, you
know,
seem
a cute.
Polite.
Oh, I try to be.
Yeah, but if you walk up there all crazy, they're going to give you the one with the cut. They're not going to do the sugar right. It's going to be a bitter, terrible experience. They're going to ensure that you never come back.
And
so always be kind to who's ever working at the Ventanita.
How many times? Yeah, you know what? Actually, I want to know about that. How often did you get to talk to the people working at the Ventanita?
Any time that you go there, you're going to have an opportunity for conversation. I took every opportunity as an opportunity to conversate and to learn from people, ask them questions. And the thing that I found out is that most everybody is, if you approach them respectfully, they're going to answer any question that you have.
What surprised you most about, did they tell you anything that really surprised you about, the work they do or the kind of customers they run into?
Nah. I didn't really ask him about that. I was just more so going and documenting the reality of the situation. Maybe to them I look crazy, and that's cool with me. Some of them, not every single person wanted to talk to me or get their picture taken, but a vast majority of them did. So what I found out is that no matter where people are from, no matter what language they speak, if you're in the city of Miami and you approach them respectfully, then they're going to probably give you opportunity to find out about them and their life.
And again, there are a lot of wonderful pictures in this book, again, called Cuban Coffee, Windows of Miami. And we're talking with Jacob Cattell. He's the author of the book. He took all those photographs. He spent quite a bit of, well, he said he did in 6 weeks. He spent quite a bit of time, though, traveling to almost 100, if not more, of these coffee windows throughout Cayo Ocho and parts of Miami to share his experiences. We're going to talk a bit more about this experience coming up. Just a reminder that this is our membership campaign, and this is the opportunity for you to show your appreciation for programs like this one. So please, if you have a moment, pick up the phone or go online and make that pledge. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez, and I've been talking with Jay Cattell, Jacob Cattell, and he has a new book out. It's called Cuban Coffee, Windows of Miami. It is a book of photographs, a collection of hundreds of photographs of a journey that he took. He went to more than 100 different ventanitas. These are the little coffee windows you find up and down Cayo Ocho and all around Miami. And I could say I have seen some of them up in Palm Beach County. They're up and down South Florida. And he's collected a lot of these photographs from his journey. You know what, Jacob, I was curious when you would go up to a window and you would introduce yourself to any of the customers, you know, you were telling them who you are and what you're doing. What sort of things were you asking them? What did you want to know about the customers?
Well, anytime I talk to somebody, I just go by the instinct of you know, saying, you know, ask them a simple question, and you don't know what somebody's going to come up with. I was in Little Havana at the Orlanchito Cafe, which is like a Honduran catracho place over there, and there was this lady, Felita Rosa, who walks 100 blocks a day, and she started telling me all about her life, how her father was almost assassinated by the CIA, and she got all these fake papers. They changed her name to a dead lady named Lydia Saboica, and she was involved in this international Nicaraguan-American conspiracy involving Che Guevara and todo eso. So you already know, and people are going to tell you anything. Everybody in South Florida's got an interesting story, I believe. And I heard a lot of them just by introducing myself.
How many of the stories did you hear? Did you stop and say, wait a second, how could this be true? Could this be possibly be true?
I take everything at face value. I believe everybody and trust nobody. So if somebody tells me a story and I'm there to write it down, that's what I do.
I'm curious, for you, what makes a great cup of coffee?
A lot of caffeine and sugar. Wake you up.
Again, what was the best experience you had with a coffee? Do you remember?
Well, I really enjoyed the journey. I think the joy is in the journey, so every next cup of coffee is always the best cup of coffee.
You ever been to a Starbucks?
I've been to a Starbucks. I won't say that, and they don't get no free shout-outs. Shout-out La Palma, Montes de Oca, and Cacique. I love those places.
No, but I mean, you know what? I mean, you think about it, like, I wonder about that in Miami. It's like, you know, there's Starbucks everywhere, but really what's unique, I think, about life in South Florida is the fact that you have these little coffee windows.
Sure.
And so you have a different kind of experience than you would in a Starbucks. You know what? I wanted to go back and ask you about when you were talking to the people who worked inside of these coffee windows, and a lot of them tend to be women, I've noticed.
Yeah, definitely.
You know what did you learn about their stories? I mean, I know how busy they get, but were they able to talk to you about themselves and, you know, their life?
Yeah, like Hidalvis from the Pit Barbecue, which you wouldn't really think that they have Cuban coffee or a Cuban coffee window there, but they actually do, and she told me about her life in Camagüey. And that was really cool. And she also introduced me to San Lazaro, the patron saint of who loves Cuban coffee. And I actually gave him a tribute for my journey, $5 and some coffee.
What's the next project for you? What's the next big journey for you?
Well, this is actually my fifth book that's published. I did one with Fresh Kid Ice from Two Live Crew. Shout out to Chinaman. I did two books with Henry Stone from TK Records. Legend. Working with Joe Stone over at Henry Stone Music, henrystonemusic.com. And the next books that I have coming out in the next month is going to be three of them. One is a visual history of TK Records, Hylia, straight out of the archives from the company itself, photos that had never been seen before. And I'm working directly with the company on that. I also got Kitchen Restaurants in Miami. I've been freelancing for like 10 years, 1099 all the way. So I have a massive archives, a treasure trove, which I own 90%. 90% of everything that I've ever done for any media corporation, I actually own it. So I'm going into the archives. I'm bringing out Kitchen Restaurants of Miami, the visual history of TK Records, and one top secret special surprise that's on the way for 2018. Well, building the catalog.
His book right now, this one that's out, is Cuban Coffee, Windows of Miami. Again, Jake Cattell. It's been a pleasure, man. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Hey, everybody, make sure to check out WLRN.org and give them a few dollars. You can afford it, and they're going to represent. Just let them know who you are and what you want to hear about. This public radio, the airwaves belong to the people, from the keys to the trees. OG Big Ben, shout out. What's up?
Yeah. I don't have to. I can't say any better than that. That's perfect. I do have to say this, though. That is the end of the program.
People's History of Overtown is the other book I did. Always mention that. 1896, Foundation of the City of Miami. Very important. Thank you.
All right.
Respect.
You know what? I just have to say, before I run out of time, that is the program. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks again so much for listening. And make sure, pledge your support now.